Heated fires raged beneath the thermoglass skin, fueled by Gaia knew what, plumes of smoke steadily uncoiling from fractures and deep fissures in the surface. Mildred had told her what this place had looked like before Skydark. It was hard for Christie to imagine a great salt lake stretching off to the west, or a large city framed by a backdrop of hills. Mildred said there had been a huge temple with a gold statue atop it that could be seen for miles around. All that had once been, immense lake, bracketing hills, glorious temple, was gone, vaporized by the fury of man-made suns. An unseen rock scraped against her ankle, then clattered noisily away. Christie's attention snapped back to the ground and its hazards. Because of the accumulated stresses of an already long and dangerous day, because of the distance she had already walked, because of the unrelenting sun and heat, it was getting more and more difficult for her to maintain a triple red level of alert. Ryan turned his head at the sound the rock made. Seeing that she was okay, he half-smiled and turned back without slowing. Christie knew he wasn't pushing himself and everyone else to exhaustion just because an angel-faced, 7-year-old girl had asked him to avenge her father's murder. Ryan was far too much of a pragmatist and far too good a leader to fall for something like that. Sure, he had a personal score to settle with the canny who had stolen his Steyr SSG-70. In Deathlands, a person's main blaster was like a strong right hand. It was the key to survival. It was something that was never willingly surrendered and always retrieved if possible. And there was no forgetting the wounds suffered by his friends during the canny attack. Christie's own shoulder and neck throbbed agonizingly in time with her footfalls, a reminder of how close she had come to death. But payback with interest for that had already been dished out in the form of the 17 enemy they had left chilled in the willow thicket. A need for more retribution wasn't the demon driving Ryan across the high plains. The one-eyed man wasn't consumed with anger. He was steely calm. He had heard of Moonboy's reputation as a pure Normville, a place where Jack and Christie were at risk of being summarily murdered, and yet he was resolved, as were Christie and the rest of the companions, to take the risk and do what had to be done in order to hunt down and exterminate the remaining cannies. Extermination was standard operating procedure with cannies. Because of the way they could blend in and mingle with unsuspecting folk, like wolves among the sheep, they were far more dangerous than stickies, scalies, or scabbies. The Gaudy House bartender had served this particular bunch of flesh-eaters without batting so much as an eyelash. They had walked unnoticed through the Ville of Perdition, and equally unnoticed had carried off another victim. Christie recalled word for word what her uncle Tyus McCann had taught her about them when she was young.
You can always tell a canny if you get nose to nose with one. Death hangs over them like stink gas in a bog. Trouble is, if you get close enough to whiff that brand of brimstone, it's too late to back away. Smell that smell, girl, and make no mistake, you've got to fight for your life, tooth and claw.
Tyus had passed on this information after a pair of suspected cannies had been caught red-handed at a slaughter scene in a cabin near their Harmonyville homestead. Subsequent events were forever burned into Christie's memory. After having been beaten and kicked around by the townsfolk, the two suspects were dragged into the Ville Square and staked out on the ground. The men had loudly protested their innocence, and when it had come time for them to get fed, they had refused the flatbread and water they were offered. Inside of 3 days, the pair had gone stark raving mad, eyes rolling, jaws snapping, foaming at the mouth, howling like dogs. Eventually, they swallowed their own tongues, and their faces turned purple, then black, choked to death by their chill frenzy. To a canny, Tyus had explained, the taste of human blood delivered a jolt-like kick. If a canny was without blood for too long, he or she went crazy. According to her uncle, that was the reason why, when they couldn't find victims, they chilled and ate each other. Christie's thoughts drifted back to the children. And as she remembered holding them in her arms, she felt a sudden, surprisingly painful pang of loss. Though her desire for babies of her own was strong, she had always suppressed the maternal urge. Unlike the world before Skydark that Mildred and Doc had told her about, there was no way of increasing your odds in Deathlands. No amount of jack or of blaster power could stack the deck in your favor. Even rich and powerful barons died prematurely, and in the same wretched agonies as everybody else. Living a life on the edge of oblivion was a hard enough cross for an adult to bear, let alone a child. In a flash of pure white light, an image formed in Christie's consciousness. She saw a snake's flat, scaled head, twice as wide as the back of her hand, with eyes like bulging blood drops and exposed fangs trailing thick strands of yellow poison. She immediately recognized the image for what it was, a premonition of impending danger. The gift of second sight was just part of the mutie inheritance handed down to her by her mother, Sonia, an inheritance that allowed her to tap into the all-powerful feminine spiritual force of the planet. Shaking free of the startling vision, Christie came to an abrupt stop. 3 yards from her right boot, it looked like just another flat rock. Then, the rock moved. She let out a cry and took a giant step sideways, her hand automatically dropping to the butt of her revolver. More than 7 feet long, and at its widest point 2 feet around, there was nothing shy about this snake. It was both aggressive and predatory. It rapidly slithered closer to her, then coiled itself. A tail bigger around than her forearm reared up, amber-colored rattle shaking as the mutie diamondback prepared to strike.
Hold it!
The column froze at his command.
Oh my God!
Mildred turned and saw, for 30 yards in all directions, the rocks beginning to uncoil.
They're everywhere!
As if responding to some silent, instinctive call to attack, dozens upon dozens of rattlers, some of them easily 40-pounders, their backs as big as fire hoses, moved in for the kill. Christie unholstered her .38, but before she could aim and fire, the snake in front of her struck, fully two-thirds of its body length extended, its jaws gaping wide. She instinctively twisted to the side, and the fangs missed the top of her thigh by less than an inch. With amazing speed, the huge rattler recoiled itself for a second strike, this time point blank. Christie was tightening down on the revolver's trigger when Ryan called out a second warning.
No blasters! We don't want to give away our position. Follow me. I'm going to open up a path.
Christie held her fire, but kept the snake in her sights and her finger on the trigger as Ryan drew his panga from its sheath. The blade slashed down in a tight arc, and under the blade's keen edge, the rattler's head seemed to leap free of its neck. Spurting 10-foot jets of blood, the headless body went wild, thrashing and slapping the dirt. Ryan grabbed Christie by the arm and pulled her along after him.
This way!
No one questioned Ryan's choice of direction. There wasn't time for discussion. They all knew that standing still meant certain death. Christie followed his boulder-hopping, straight-line dash. Farther out on the plain, she could see more big rocks turning into big snakes, and the big snakes were sliding their way. Whatever path Ryan could clear with the 18-inch knife, it wasn't going to stay clear for long. The panga slashed down again, and with a single stroke, the one-eyed man hacked a snake cleanly in two. As they jumped the writhing halves and rushed on, Christie saw Ryan shift the panga from right hand to left, just in time to flick out his wrist and catch another mutie rattler in mid-strike. His left-handed slice chopped off half the snake's head, just in front of the eyes, cleaving its fangs and tongue as well. Disarmed, its face gushing red, the rattler instantly recoiled and struck at Christie's shin as she passed by. 40 pounds of muscle and bone slammed against the side of her boot and knocked her off balance. With a crash, she landed on her hip on the rocks. When she looked up, still dazed by the impact, she stared into the wounded snake's eyes and saw the hate. Pure, unreasoning hate. Blood mist puffed out in time with its breath as the mutilated rattler rewound itself, preparing to hit her harder. Christie jumped out of the way before it could strike. Ahead of her, Ryan growled a curse.
Fire blast!
She closed the gap between them while he dealt with the three snakes that blocked their escape route. Forehand, backhand, forehand, the panga's blade screamed through the air, and severed, outsized viper heads hurtled off across the boulder field. For a quarter mile across the desert, the companions ran full out. Only when Ryan was sure there was nothing but real rocks for 50 yards around them did he signal a halt to their headlong flight. Gasping and drenched with sweat, the companions slumped to seats on boulders. It took several minutes for them to catch their breath long enough to drink water. Lowering his canteen, JB jabbed a thumb in the direction they had come.
Shame to waste all that good white meat.
I'll cook it up if you go back and collect it.
Rather eat my own foot.
A half hour later, and another 2 miles into their trek, it began to rain. but not raindrops saturated with caustic chemicals. It rained birds. Small, dead birds. A few at first, hurtling down head first with wings folded, dark brown blurs thudding into and bouncing limp.